You might have noticed, newspapers, TV stations, and other news outlets are dropping like flies in Canada these days. Whoops, there goes another one. But that's okay, because it leaves more room for independent media, like Rabble.ca. You can join the independent media revolution too. Go to www.rabble.ca/donate.
Asia Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to Asia Pacific Currents this Saturday, the 20th of August. Oh, the days just keep marching on, don't they, Pierre?
That's right, Giselle, and I'm 1 year older this week, so I can certainly know. But
does that take you through to 75 now, is it?
Close, Giselle. And I know, and dear listeners, mathematics never been Giselle's forte, but, you know.
But ageism definitely is.
That's right. But still, you know, my wisdom just overwhelms you. I know that. So, you know, I have to expect this.
If you were confused, listeners, you are listening to Asia Pacific Currents. It is a program brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on the web, all the www.aawl.org.au. We're on Facebook and Twitter, so find us on those social media platforms for news and current affairs from around the Asia Pacific region.
And I'm Pierre Morrow.
And I'm Giselle Hannah.
And what have we got on today? We've got a different show.
We're diverting from our normal format. Normally, listeners will bring you news from around the region, followed by a feature interview. Today, we've got two feature interviews. Of course, for listeners that have been our stalwart supporters since pre-2004, that was our old format. We used to have two interviews every show. So, you know, we're throwing back to the good old days. But we'll be speaking first up with Steve Diston. He is the organiser for the Carlton United Breweries dispute. He's from the ETU. And so we're going to be talking about where that dispute's at here in Melbourne, Victoria, but also looking at the international aspect of that campaign, because as listeners will know, Sab Miller, that owns CUB, is also attacking workers in India. So we're going to look at some of the international aspects of the campaign. And in the second part of the program, we'll be speaking with Nick McClellan, who is a long-standing Asia-Pacific activist. He's currently working on a documentary about Fijian soldiers and sailors that were sent to work in Britain's hydrogen bomb tests at Christmas Island. So we'll talk about that documentary and also his efforts to raise some funds to complete that.
All right, that sounds great. And dear listeners, just remember that if you want more details on our stories, you can always go to our website. We usually put them there. You can always contact us through our Facebook, and of course, we podcast this program as well. And of course, good morning to all our listeners on the web who may be around anywhere around the world. And of course, not too sure if we thank the Solidarity Breakfast for another very interesting program. We'll just go to a community announcement and then we'll be back with Steve.
3CR programs provide information and analysis you won't hear in the mainstream.
Today we'll be looking at the legacy of the US war on Vietnam on Laos.
And as far as corporate capitalism is concerned, it is the worst political and economic system that you can have.
Our laws about jailing refugees and asylum seekers are so well crafted.
Sex is not irrelevant, and we like who we are, but we don't have to be imprisoned by our gender.
Become a subscriber today. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. 3CR, the voice of dissent.
5 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. As many listeners are no doubt aware, there is a dispute at the Carlton United Breweries brewery in Abbotsford in Melbourne, Victoria. That dispute is about CUB sacking over 50 workers and expecting them to reapply for their jobs for less than half the pay and basically outsourcing and attempting to smash the union. The company that owns CUB is called Saab Miller, and they're doing something very similar in India with mass harassment and intimidation of their union leaders, as well as the company's refusal to respect collective bargaining rights. Of course, being an international union movement, these two disputes are expressing solidarity for one another. And we've got the ETU CUB organiser, Steve Diston, with us on the line. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. How are you going?
Very well, thank you. I guess to start with, tell us where the dispute is at here in Melbourne.
Well, we're about to enter the 11th week of the dispute next week. And when we say dispute, it's a pretty strange word to use for it when it's just a blatant outright attack on workers' rights. You know, this isn't just an argument. This is a company that's trying to union bust big time. And 11 weeks next week, so it's... we're getting towards the end of winter, which will be nice. The weather's starting to warm up, so it makes picketing a lot easier, that's for sure.
And we know that there's been some solidarity expressed between the workers. So I'm not going to call it a dispute. You're right; it is an absolute attack on the comrades on the workers here. But there has been some solidarity between the workers in Melbourne and India. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, I reckon we. Got some similarities in what's going on here. You know, a big, greedy company who uses its power to try and throw its weight around in different communities that completely disrespects the people in the societies in which they want to sell their products, which is probably not a great way to market your product, to be honest. But, yeah, we're feeling what they're feeling over there. You know, just another one of these big, heartless multinationals treating the people in the country in which they're operating in total and utter disrespect and contempt. And I feel for them. We know what they're going through.
Now, in terms of from what I can gather, CUB's own. Steve, this is Pierre. Just say hello. It's owned by Saab Miller, and I think they might actually be joining into another even bigger company, AB InBev. But these companies like Saab Miller are huge, and you've said that you've now been on the picket line 11 weeks, basically almost 3 months. I mean, obviously these companies have got very deep pockets. How do you reckon that in the end workers should organise around these global companies, given that it's not just that you're fighting the CUB management there in Abbotsford, but you're actually fighting a company with huge resources worldwide?
Well, this is the thing. It becomes a little bit bigger than just, you know, factories here, there and everywhere. It does become, we need some systematic change. You know, what's happening here is fundamentally wrong. It shouldn't be happening. Governments shouldn't be granting international corporations more rights than the citizens who vote those governments in. We need some fundamental changes in our industrial relations system that evens up the balance a bit more. Because when you've got multi-billion-dollar companies, you know, as you say, with very deep pockets, I mean, workers are at a clear disadvantage in that equation. And our governments should be looking after our interests rather than these big multinationals who don't have any sort of loyalties with any country. All they have a loyalty to is the dollar, the euro, the pound, or whichever currency they're actually operating in.
I think you made a very good point there, Steve. And just and given that you're the organisers on the ground, I mean, you might not know much about what is happening, you know, to get links internationally. But given that Saab Miller employs, I think I went to see the site, tens of thousands of workers, do you know if the unions here in Australia have made contacts with their counterparts in other countries to maybe get some actions in other countries against Saab Miller?
Yeah, actually we have the Unite Union in England. There's an organiser over there by the name of Frank Morris. He's legend of a bike, if you've never heard of him. They've been organising some stuff over there with Unite Union and also the rank and file electricians group over there. They donated £1,000 a couple of weeks ago to the dispute, actually, which is usually you'll see statements of international solidarity and sometimes a protest, but to have large sums of money donated, that I've never seen that before in an industrial dispute in Victoria. And also we have a big meeting coming up in the United States. All the international electrical unions are coming together, and there's about 5,000 delegates from those unions coming together, and they're going to be meeting in, wouldn't you know it, the headquarters of where AB InBev is, which just bought out Miller. So I dare say there'll be something happening over there.
So even a bigger company, and maybe the electricity could go out on some of these factories around the world.
Well, I reckon if you've got 5,000 delegates from all around the world in the one place where the headquarters is, I reckon that might be a recipe for them to either sit down with us nicely or you know, have a large group of angry people there. But there again, when you point out, you know, the electricity going out, in this modern day and age, what might have been seen as, you know, a bit of rat baggery and, you know, having a bit of a crack back in the day, but, you know, you're now looking at being charged with terrorism laws, you know, for things that back in the day would have just been a bit of mischief. All the laws that have been created over the last 30 years to hold workers back, it's not just on the industrial relations front, it's on many, many fronts. Surveillance of trade unions, tapping our phones, you know, to everything. It's unbelievable.
I think you're perfectly describing what happens at the pointy end of a capitalist crisis when the system is absolutely crunching and squeezing us for every last cent, because really it's so unstable and it's shaking. But as scary, as frightening as the prospect of being out of work is, some of the things you talked about, the delegates meeting in the United States, those things are really inspiring and do give us some hope for the future and the ways forward to organise. You also mentioned a little bit about raising money, because of course these blokes have been out for 11 weeks. If people wanted to support the strike fund or whatever we're calling it, the fund to support the workers while they're putting up a really strong battle against Zap Miller, how would they support you financially?
There's a couple of different ways. You can either go down to the ETU office in Arden Street in North Melbourne, and any donations made there, they'll give you a receipt, thank you letter to your workplace, if it's a workplace. Down on the picket line, down at the front of the brewery, we're happy to take any cash donations straight down there. And it goes in two forms. Any of the cash donations straight down the line, we use that on the food and the materials and things that we have down there, the fuel and all the rest of the stuff, and the stuff that donated in the office, that ends up going into strike pay for the boys. Well, not strike pay. We're not on strike, we're sacked. More like anti-starvation money, I suppose you'd call it.
Totally understand, and we'll certainly put those numbers and their ability to pay. We'll re-advertise it again. Just as a last question, Steve, given that the workers have been out for 11 weeks, they've been, you know, there's been a lot of support. Like I went to the Battle of the Bands at Trades Hall, I think it was last week. How do you see the dispute going from there? And in your opinion, how much longer do you think it'll go?
Well, one thing I do know about the dispute, because there's a lot of uncertainty when you've got something like this going on, one certain thing I do know is the weather is starting to improve, which is going to make things a little bit easier for us. So I don't know how long it'll go, but we've already got some, we've got the hoodies at the moment and the beanies, the winter range. We've already started designing the spring and the summer range. So there's talk about a slippery slide and pools and all sorts of things. This goes into summer. So the boys are pretty resilient down here, and I think you'll find as long as we can stop their families starving, they'll stay out there as long as they need to.
All right, that sounds fantastic, Steve, and we wish you all the very best, and we'll certainly keep our listeners abreast how your struggle is going. And, of course, we wish you a complete victory.
Thank you very much.
That was Steve Diston. He is the organiser for CUB, the Carlton United Brewery ETU dispute that is or the ETU fight that is currently on foot. Of course, to support those workers, you can get down to the brewery itself. You can financially support them by donating to the workers on the picket or to the ETU office located in Arden Street in North Melbourne. It's 15 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR.
This is Irene Bolger, former Secretary of the Nurses Federation in Victoria. Throughout the nurses dispute in 1986 and the waterfront dispute in 1998, 3CR was always there, broadcasting the voices of workers in struggle.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio and we're broadcasting live from the Baeda Chicken Strike here in Melbourne.
We've just seen all of the thousands of nurses walk through to their meeting and people from different unions showing their solidarity.
3CR. Radio for the workers, by the workers, since 1976.
It is 16 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents. Nearly 300 Fijian soldiers and sailors were sent to work on Britain's hydrogen bomb tests at Christmas Island and Molden Island, now part of Kiribati, in the late 1950s. Today, they live with the health effects. There's a new initiative by some comrades, some activists, to make a documentary called Kirisimasi. It's a documentary film that will tell the story of Fiji's nuclear veterans. Joining us now is one of those activists, Nick McClellan, who many of you will know as one of the founders of Asia Pacific Currents, but also a stalwart Asia Pacific activist. Welcome, Nick.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm working with a colleague, Torika Bolotangivi, to produce a film. Next year, 2017, is the 60th anniversary of Britain's hydrogen bomb tests. People will know that with the support of Prime Minister Robert Menzies at the time, the British conducted nuclear tests in Australia at the Montebello Islands, at Maralinga and Emu Field in South Australia. And both the Indigenous people of South Australia and also the servicemen and women, particularly the servicemen who staffed the test sites, were affected by radiation at the time. But Britain went on to conduct a further 9 hydrogen bomb tests in, as you say, what's today the Republic of Kiribati, but was then the British Gilbert and Ellis Islands colony. And they staffed the test site not only with British service people, but with a number of people from Fiji, and we're working to tell their story.
Well, tell me a little bit about the process for getting the documentary. Are many of these workers still alive, still around today to talk to about the events of the 1950s?
No, a lot of them have died over the last decade. This, as I say, is the 60th anniversary of the test, so all these men are now in their 80s. Yet there is still an active group, the Fiji Nuclear Veterans Association, that has been campaigning for many years for compensation and recognition from the British government. Because this was a peacetime activity, they weren't eligible for the pensions that, say, Fijians who went to the British military operations in Malaya or World War II received. And I've been involved with the Veterans Association for some time campaigning. They're really eager to have their story recorded before they die, frankly, now that they're aging, so that future generations of Fijians can understand what happened during the colonial era. This is a story that largely hasn't been told. They're also very worried about intergenerational effects for their children and grandchildren, because one of the things we know from the US, the British, the French nuclear testing in the Pacific is that there are effects on future generations. A research scientist in New Zealand named Al Rowland has shown that there's been genetic translocations for some of the sailors who went aboard the Naval Task Force that went to the Christmas Island tests. So they want to record this history and they want to share it with future generations to understand the legacies of the nuclear era in the Pacific.
Hi, Nick. This is Pierre. I think you've really hit the nail on the head there about the hidden history. A lot of people would seem to forget that there was a huge... the whole Pacific was actually used as a atomic bombing test site, and that history seems to have been forgotten, hasn't it?
Very much so. It's been really a laboratory. France conducted 193 tests at Mururoa and Fangataufa Atoll, both in the atmosphere and underground. And today there's an association of the former workers who staffed the test site called Mururoa Itatu. They have over 4,000 members, and these were workers who staffed the test site as labourers, as divers, as customs officers, a whole range of jobs to keep the nuclear test site going alongside the military who were deployed there. And today, as with the Fijian veterans, they're campaigning for recognition and appropriate compensation for health effects, because many of them are suffering from cancer or other diseases that they attribute to their time working on the test sites. So, you know, trade unionists will understand this is a classic industrial health and safety policy, that workers have the right to appropriate compensation, that employers, in this case the state, has the responsibility to look after people who are involved in these programs.
Look, 100% correct there, Nick. And the question to me really is, given that, you know, the English tests were, you said, you know, up to 60 years ago, the Mururoa were more recent test as well. What has been, and given that we know so much about the effects of radiation damage and being exposed to radiation, what is the official line by both the British and the French to these claims for compensation?
Well, the British have refused to recognise that anyone was exposed to hazardous levels of ionising radiation. More than a decade ago, British, New Zealand and Fijian veterans launched a court case in the British courts, and went right the way through to the Court of Appeal, with the Ministry of Defence fighting every inch of the way to reject compensation. Recently, last year, the Fiji government gave a pension to the survivors of the Christmas Island nuclear tests and to their families of the Fijian soldiers or sailors who died. It's a small amount of compensation, but really vital for these men who are, as we said, aging, often in ill health, living in rural villages without much support. And so the gesture by Prime Minister Varenyi Bainimarama was well accepted. Ironically, his very father, Ratu Inoki Bainimarama, led the first contingent of sailors aboard a British warship at the tests.
Yes, history can get very convoluted. And in terms of your effort to raise money, two questions. Like, first of all, how much money do you need? And secondly, would you consider or see in the future of having some kind of tour of some of the Fijian people to Australia?
We're working with the Fiji Nuclear Veterans Association to publicise their case. Many of them are ageing and it's a bit difficult for them to travel, but we're certainly trying to raise awareness about their campaign, which is still ongoing, for recognition by the British government. Next year we'll be producing the documentary film Kurisimasi, and as you say, we're crowdfunding to try and raise some of the money, together with a team of Fijian filmmakers, cinematographer, sound recordist and so on. In November this year, we'll be in Fiji meeting with a number of the veterans and recording their history, meeting with a range of their family members to talk about what they're doing. And if anyone's got any spare dough, we'd welcome some support. There's a fundraising site called Pozible, P-O-Z-I-B-L-E, and you can look for the film Kurisimasi on the Pozible website, pozible.com. It's an Australian crowdfunding site, and we're very eager for donations to support this work. I'm also producing a book. We've been interviewing people not only from Fiji, but also some of the Ikiribas people, the Gilbert Islanders, who were living on the island at the time, and we'll be publishing a book next year, which also records some of these people's history. You know, it's really important that we record the stories of ordinary people, not the heroes who made the bomb, the British scientists who are often lauded in the official histories of this topic, but the lived experience of ordinary people who went along to do their job and are living with the health and environmental consequences of this imperial folly.
As a final question, Nick, we know that trade unions are under lots of pressure in Fiji, but what's been the response of trade unions in New Zealand and Australia? Because as you've said, I mean, there's a very clear links to that, to the occupational health and safety and occupational exposure.
There's attempts to try and rebuild solidarity across the region. Earlier this year in February, I attended the regional meeting of SPOCTU. That's the South Pacific and Oceanic Council of Trade Unions that brings together unionists from Australia, New Zealand and Pacific Island countries. There were representatives of the Fijian trade unions there, including Felix Anthony, leader of the FTUC, the umbrella body, one of the umbrella bodies for unions in Fiji. They were talking about both the day-to-day challenges of organising in the workplace in Fiji at a time where there's enormous pressure on public sector workers like teachers, nurses and others to preserve their jobs. At the same time, there are political constraints still in Fiji, decrees that limit, for example, trade unionists to stand for parliament and so on. So there's a lot of attempts to try and build and strengthen cooperation across international boundaries. And you see that in positive ways. For example, Pacific Island workers are coming to Australia as seasonal workers to do fruit picking and work in other areas under the Australian Seasonal Worker Program. We've seen really positive links, say, between unions in Australia and their counterparts in Vanuatu. There's a cross-union agreement with the Vanuatu National Workers Union so that there can be proper education of workers who are travelling to Australia about their labour rights, about workplace conditions, and indeed about how to join a union and what benefits that can bring for people who come as temporary workers. And as we know, there's over 700,000 people as workers in Australia on temporary visas, 457 skilled workers, seasonal workers working in the horticulture sector, lots of students working 20 hours a week or more in 7-Elevens and taxi drivers and so on. And it's really important for the Australian labour movement to support their counterparts coming from the Pacific as fellow workers.
Well, Nick, we certainly couldn't agree more with those words. So thank you very much for appearing on the program. And
for listeners who are interested in supporting the fundraising campaign for the documentary, Kirisi Masi, we'll advertise details of the Possible website on AAWL's website. But for your information, Possible is spelled P-O-Z-I-B-L-E, and do a search for the Kirisi Masi short film to locate that crowdfunding site. Nick, thank you so much for your time on the program today, and good luck with the rest of your fundraising efforts.
Giselle, Pierre, thanks very much for the chance. And we'd encourage people, not just with the film, but with other ways next year, to remember the history of British nuclear testing, both in Australia and in neighbouring Pacific countries.
That was Nick McClellan, a stalwart activist of the Asia-Pacific region, one of the founders of Asia-Pacific Currents. As I said, we'll advertise those details on the show. It's 28 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR.
Which base provides key information for every US drone strike, played a crucial role in Iraq and Afghanistan wars, as well as providing targeting and surveillance information for the Israeli Defense Force.
Star Wars.
The Empire Strikes Back.
War is terrorism.
It's the Pine Gap Joint Defense Facility, located just 20 kilometres from Alice Springs on Arunda Country, and this year marks 50 years of its inglorious existence. Come and join the Closed Pine Gap protest near the gates of the base from September 26th to 30th. For all the details, head to closepinegap.org. Get in quick to book your early bird bus ticket from Melbourne for just $200 return. That's closepinegap.org. See you there.
Star Wars.
Close Pine Gap is a 3CR supporter.
War is terrorism.
Star Wars.
It's just on 28, getting close to 29 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we've really got just about 30 seconds to go for a quick announcement before Palestine Remembered program. I just want to make one comment and one announcement. As everyone would have known from the mass media this week, there's been a lot of celebration in Australia about the Long Tan 50th year anniversary, and obviously a bit of rewriting history about the whole Vietnam War and we've totally forgotten that it was an imperialist war, and the fact there was huge mass opposition to that war in Australia. But the interesting thing I want to comment about is not so much on that, that could possibly be a show, a program in the future, is the fact there was another 50th anniversary this week, and it's the Gurindji's strike. And that was the walkout by workers, Aboriginal workers at the Vesti pastoral lease. And it really was a seminal event in the struggle for Aboriginal self-determination and rights for workers, especially Aboriginal pastoral workers there. So it's very important to remember. And we'll put it on our news site. And Giselle said, I better hurry up. And the announcement is, don't forget next Saturday, the next big refugee rally, Saturday, 27th of August, 1 p.m. at the State Library. That's all I've got from myself, Pierre Morrow.
And Giselle Hannah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.